You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still in studio with me is Nate. We're going to continue talking about Iraq now. We've been talking about Iraqi Kurdistan. There's been a few other developments. In the past week, there had been kind of this ongoing discussion about whether the United States was going to work with Iran next door on the threat of ISIS. Obviously, all of the Shia factions, the militias, have been reactivated, and they're typically aligned with Iran, although they're also Arab, which is a different ethnic group than the predominant one in Iran. They are sort of being reactivated in a holy war against these Sunni extremists under ISIS. So not a great situation in that now, rather than defending the territorial integrity of the country or whatever, it's just a straight up and down Sunni extremists versus Shia extremists all strapping themselves up with suicide equipment and going to battle. And that's not great. But anyway, the development that happened on Sunday as we're recording this was that the supreme leader, the Grand Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, said that he was not interested in working with the United States. And the reasons that he gave for this was that he said that the United States was not backing the Maliki government, not that anybody is really, even in Iraq at this point, and they support the Maliki government very strongly, and that people who wanted the U.S. to come in and help just want Iraq to be divided up. Obviously, Iran's very opposed to the idea, unlike Turkey now, Iran's very opposed to the idea of Kurdistan breaking up, not because they're necessarily concerned about their own Kurdish region leaving. I don't think that's a huge concern for them, realistically. The Iranian military is quite large and impressive. But it's more of a concern that this means that the Shias will not be able to rule over the rest of the country, including the Sunni Arabs and the Kurdish ethnic group, and sort of, you know, get all the oil and dominate them politically. I mean, I think the problem is that the religious leadership in Iran, at least, does view this very much as a sort of holy war of conquest to try to conquer and retain control of a united Iraq, that this has to be under Shia control because the Safavid Empire in the 1600s or whatever converted these areas predominantly to be Shia. I mean, if you look at the map sort of historically, the Safavid Empire extended across both of the across Mesopotamia, the literal area between the two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates, but then did not cross further west than that, which means that western Iraq, the Anbar province and such, you know, and Nineveh or Nineveh province, that these are the areas that were left as Sunni, and they were typically part of the various other empires. This has been an area that's been long contested back and forth between whoever was in charge of Persia and whoever was in charge of the major empire to the west of that. So either the power in the Arabian Peninsula, or the power in Egypt, or the power in Turkey, or the power in Rome, even. I mean, at one point, Mesopotamia was conquered by Rome, not really to add it to the Roman Empire, but solely to have a bigger buffer against the Parthians and whatnot. And right now, it's not really helping that the ISIS people are rolling in and saying, we're leading a holy war against the Safavids. Again, the Safavids have been gone for literally centuries now, but they're saying that this is a struggle against the people who converted Iraq to Shia Islam specifically, or at least converted a majority of the population, a majority of the Arab population. So that's kind of the situation there. I don't think this is necessarily a great thing, but I mean, it's also not that ancient of a struggle because, as we've been talking about, a lot of this is created by how the lines were drawn by the Western colonial powers after World War I, or even somewhat before then, and also after World War II. So this is kind of a bit of a problematic framing. But Nate, what is your take on this development about Iran saying first that they might cooperate with the U.S. and then saying that they don't want to cooperate with the U.S.?
Well, I think it really shows how far we've come from, was it about 2001, where we went into Afghanistan, and Iran did provide some element of support because the Taliban was not their friend. I mean, they certainly were not ally with them. Just, it seems like the Iranian strategy right now is just to sort of, I guess, wait for the dust to settle in Iraq, try to exert as much influence as possible, but recognize that, you know, that there's too much entrenched ethnic conflict between the Sunni and Shia to expect a satellite state that we might think of when we're talking about Eastern Europe during the 70s, 80s, all that. I think that they just want to have some hand in the power vacuum that's going to go on there for the next couple of years and have some influence on the government, but at the same time, they recognize that it's not going to necessarily ever be, or anytime soon, be a solid state for them, as you might say. I think they just want to make sure that doesn't get out of control. They can sort of play their hand there as long as possible, but they definitely don't want the U.S. back in there, I don't think.
Right. Well, I'm not sure I entirely agree, just because, I mean, I think that some of their perspective is that the Sunni-led regime under Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons on Iran and went to war with Iran for almost 10 years and caused just tremendous loss of life. And I think that they're seeing this as kind of payback time on that, you know, and that's not that far in the distant past. I mean, 1980s, most of that decade was occupied by that. And both sides did commit pretty horrible atrocities, but especially Saddam Hussein's government. I think it is interesting,
with our
though,
help, of course.
Yeah, I think it is interesting that the Kurds are now welcoming in the Sunni who oppressed them, whereas the Iranians are really not letting that go, which I think then goes back to that point that I think they kind of, maybe not the political leadership of Iran, but the religious leadership of Iran still very much views this as a holy war, that, you know, it's time to everyone to strap up the bombs and go up to, you know, north of Baghdad and go blow up some Sunnis. I think that really goes back to about 1979, though. I don't think that goes back to like any Safavid concerns or whatever. I think this is a much more recent thing. But I think that they, you know, you're saying that they're going to wait and see what happens and try to get as much out of it as possible. I think that's probably their number two choice. My guess is that they would still really prefer Iraq to remain a unified state under the firm control of the Shia faction, which is why they've been so supportive of Maliki.
Yeah, there was also another article that came out as we were doing our last segment talking about how the United States under the Obama administration was looking at trying to, you know, share some intelligence with the Iraqi government.
This was a couple years ago. This plan was
was a couple years ago, yeah. And we sort of held off on sharing all sorts of various intelligence, just or limited the intelligence that we shared, just because we were fearing it would fall into Iranian hands just by proxy because of the connections between the governments. And I think that sort of provides a window into how even the Obama administration views the situation currently. We're not really trying to create any further conflict between us and the Iranians. We're not trying to give them any advantage. At the same time, we're sort of just at a standoff right now because it doesn't seem like we can really come up with any strategy to dissuade them from pursuing a nuclear program. But at the same time, it seems like Iran has softened a little bit on some of these issues. I mean, now that Ahmadinejad is no longer the president, it looks like they're moving in somewhat more of a moderate direction, but we're still extremely wary of them.
And as you said, let's also keep in mind that a lot of the antipathy that Iran has is not some just weird antipathy toward the United States that comes out of nowhere. I mean, even setting aside all the shenanigans from Operation Ajax and the Shah and the Iranian Revolution and all of that, even like more recently than that, like you said, 2001, you know, people in Iran who are typically the population's fairly pro-American, they were, you know, very upset about 9/11. They were not supportive of this. Obviously, they're opposed to Al-Qaeda as well, because Al-Qaeda is a Sunni fundamentalist group, much like ISIS. But also, like you said, they had a huge interest in what was going to happen in Afghanistan. They were a supporter of the Northern Alliance groups before we were, and they were in the same physical room negotiating the post, you know, invasion solution of what the government was going to be, and they were very much able to exert pressure on the leadership in Afghanistan and the Northern Alliance to say, you know, come up with power sharing agreements. That was happening in, you know, September, October, November, December of 2001, and then January 29th, I think it was, 2002, literally within the span of maybe a couple months, if not weeks, George W. Bush is getting up on the world stage at the State of the Union and saying that North Korea, Iraq, and Iran are part of an axis of evil. Every time that they've extended a hand to us after, you know, the last wave of being upset has died down, mutual recriminations and everything has died down, we basically bite them. It's been a very toxic relationship and a lot of very probably well-founded suspicion on both sides. I think it would probably be somewhat better if we could work together in some capacity, but I also don't think that the United States needs to be rubber stamping Iran's vision for Iraq. That's not really productive either. One thing, as we were recording this, another thing that came up was I got a comment from one of our past guest experts, and she essentially asked this question, which is, where's Hezbollah right now? Hezbollah really proving itself in the last year or so in Syria, basically propping up the Assad government and winning a lot of military victories for them to the point where the Syrian military is now able to stand on its own again and seems to be winning the civil war. The question is, we've got these troops pouring across from Syria into Iraq. When are we going to start seeing Hezbollah, the, you know, big Iranian proxies showing up from Lebanon and Syria to help combat this. That's all the time we have this week. Nate, thank you so much for joining me here on Arsenal for Democracy.
All right, thanks, Bill.
Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.